Welcome to my monthly podcast series titled Becoming a Sage. My name is Jan Fried, but you can call me Dr. Jan. I blog about leading, living, and saging or positive aging. I am passionate about helping people get from where they are to where they want to be, particularly in the second half of life. I also say I'm out to retire the word retirement. We're not really retiring, but we're moving on to something else, and I believe it takes time and intentional thought to successfully move on to what's next in life. Today, I'm interviewing Gary Foster. Gary Allen Foster is an executive recruiter, retirement, and career transition coach, writer, and speaker. He's an over 70 portfolio career guy and dedicated to helping folks over 50 adopt a new perspective on how to live longer, live better, and with more purpose in the second half. For more information on Gary and to get a copy of his free ebook, please refer to his bio attached to this podcast. Well, welcome to the series, Gary.
Well, Jan, it's a pleasure, and I'm flattered that you would seek me out and have me on your podcast. We seem to share some, I guess, kind of a common quest, so I'm delighted to be part of it.
Yeah, exactly. We're definitely aligned, and I discovered Gary from reading his articles in the Next Avenue, which is a public broadcasting PBS online publication, which I highly recommend to all of you listeners. And if you don't know about it and read it, you should. So take my advice on this. Look up Next Avenue. And in fact, Gary had one article that I like so much. I'm like, why didn't I think of that? Or why didn't I write that? So anyway, I really thoroughly enjoy the publication Next Avenue. So thanks for your work in that area, Gary.
Well, here we go.
We've just got a few questions here. And why is work important in the retirement years? And you might, I'm sure you're probably going to define your, what's your definition of work?
Well, it's a great question because and I think maybe, we have so much, compelling evidence, really, that work is important. And it's really kind of ironic that we put the word work together with the word retirement, because retirement, as you well know, because you're trying to retire the word, I mean, it means going backward. It means giving up work. Mm-hmm. When in fact, I think we have very strong, compelling evidence that work is important for us in the later periods of our life. Now, and I have to really kind of look back to my own background, my own experience. I mean, I'm a small town, rural Wyoming guy, and you know, I never really experienced a retirement around me. I mean, people worked until they couldn't. Retirement really wasn't a conversation. And, you know, as I kind of moved through life, and when I got into my 40s and say around the 80s, and I kind of got into this self-development thing, one of the things that I observed was that people who were living longest were people who stayed in the creative process. In other words, continued their work. You know, it was artists and musicians and composers and folks like that. And, you know, and as we move forward, I mean, we have a lot more evidence now that work plays a very important role in us maintaining vitality. So, I mean, you can look at, and I'm sure you're familiar with this research, the research that's been done, say, for example, in, you know, the Blue Zones with Dan Buettner and the work that he's done, where they, you know, found that the people who lived longest and had the shortest morbidity were, frankly, societies where people continued to work. And, you know, the research that's been done on centenarians confirms this, that the longer that people can work, it seems to not only extend their life, but gives them really more vitality in their later life. So I think work is important. I mean, we're wired to do work. We're wired to serve. You know, it's kind of interesting when there was a study that was done. I don't know if you're familiar with this or not. It was done by a Society of Actuarial Services. I didn't even know the organization existed, but it's called the RP 2000 study. And it compared the death rates of men 50 to 70. And one group were working men and the second group were fully retired. And they found that the death rates of those that were still working were roughly half the death rates of men who were fully retired. So, you know, it's, again, just more of that evidence. Shell Oil, for example, looked at 1,000 or thousands of their employees and found that embarking on the retirement path at age 55 actually doubled the risk for death before reaching age 65. So, you know, I look at all of that and I say, well, then I think we have a pretty strong argument for continuing some form of work. I'm sure you're finding this in your work. I mean, I think we're beginning to kind of redefine work in this. I call it the third stage or the third age of life. So, I assume maybe you're familiar with the work that that Mitch Anthony has done with his book, The New Retirement Mentality. Is that a resource that you're familiar with?
It is, but tell our listeners because most people would not.
Well, it's a great book, and Mitch is an interesting fellow because he's actually, his background is in financial planning, but his position is that we put too much emphasis on the financial planning side of retirement, if you want to call it that, or later life, and not enough attention on what I would call the emotional or psychological side of retirement. And he's a big advocates this in his book very strongly, that work is important as we continue to go through the latter part of our life. It's interesting, his definition, he refers to work as an engagement that brings value to others and meaning to me. And I like that because in my career coaching, and I also have a certification as a retirement coach. It's one of the things that I like to emphasize to people. We don't have to necessarily look at work as we've known it, say, for 30 or 40 years in say, the corporate world. We can redefine work, and work, that definition for me really resonates. It's an engagement that brings value to others and meaning to me.
I love that. I love that very much.
Yeah, I think it says a lot, and it seems to resonate with folks that are really kind of stepping into this this mystical, foggy sort of time of life, that we're calling retirement. And I'm like you. I hope we eventually will retire the word, although I think it's so deeply entrenched, I don't know that we'll ever go away. But I hope that we can begin to change a lot of mindsets with regard to the downsides of retirement, because there very definitely are downsides. So I hope that kind of gives you, a little perspective on why I think it's important. There are a couple of other studies I think are worth mentioning. IBM, a couple of years ago, did a survey, and they found that the average retiree actually didn't make it to their 24th pension check. And then in 1995, the Social Security system did somewhat similar study and found that the average number of Social Security checks was 29. So, again, just to add to the stack of compelling evidence that, just completely removing ourselves from the work environment doesn't seem to be setting us up for a really, really healthy and vital type of future.
So. Right, exactly. And not for society either. Individually it doesn't, but for collectively it doesn't either. So,
absolutely.
How is the retirement landscape changing? Since you're really entrenched in this work, what should people know about this?
Oh, golly, where to start? I think you have to really start by looking at the boomers. I mean, you're one. I'm not actually. I'm a pre-boomer. I was born in 42, so but I think of myself as a boomer. I'm 4 years prior to that age range. But boomers really have always, historically, have kind of pushed the edge, right? Questioning things, kind of iconoclastic in their thinking. And I think that's taking place now. So I think that's beginning to change the landscape. But more specifically, it gets down to a handful of things that have happened over the last several decades. One would be, and no doubt are very aware of this, I certainly experienced this, that we've had this tremendous shift in economic events. That we've moved from the industrial age to the information age. So we're not worn out, if you will, at the end of work. We don't have to work as hard physically, so we've got a little bit more in the tank, I guess you could say, at the quote-unquote end of career. But the other other thing that happened there is we saw the disappearance of pensions. I recall in my corporate career, I started off with a nice little pension and it gradually faded away. And I was, like most people today, I was, you know, then subjected to the whims of the stock market with my 401k. So that's definitely impacted people's readiness, frankly, for retirement.
Mm-hmm.
But I think also, and again, I'll come back to the boomers. I think boomers are observing what previous generations were like in retirement and just said, hey, you know, this whole idea of a park bench and bingo and bocce ball and bridge, that's not something that I want to do for 30 or 40 years. And then obviously that is impacted by the fact that we're living much longer. You know, what, say, three or four generations ago was maybe a five-year retirement space. That space now has extended 20, 30, maybe even 40 years. So that's had a major impact on how we're beginning to view the retirement. I think people are beginning to say, hey, I'm not going to spend the next 30 years involved in some innocuous habit or mm-hmm. hobby, excuse me, not habit, but innocuous hobby.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a little fearful of boredom and inactivity and realizing that they still got a lot to contribute. So,
right.
And I think, you know, when we get to this point, we've really kind of got two choices. We can either become, I'll call it a self-centered consumer, or we can be a selfless producer. And I think that's really kind of the two channels that we can pursue there in this third stage of life. Be a consumer, or we can be a producer. So,
oh, I love that. That's very good. Yeah, that's a really good summary. I like that. Well, I think mindset is so important for this stage, whatever you call it, third chapter, second half of life, you know, whatever people call it. I think so much about it is attitude and mindset. Can you address that or talk about that?
Well, I can try to, and I think it's such a vital area, Jan, because I come down on the concept of third age. I really like that because, and frankly, I'm drawing a lot of my attitude toward that from a couple of sources. One, I know you're very familiar with Mark Friedman,
yes.
He's the founder of Encore.org.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in his book, his first book, he referred to the research that was done by Peter Laslett. And Peter was a British demographic historian. And he predicted a lot of what's going on here. He predicted an emerging life stage, and he called it the third age. And the third age, the first age for him and his research, first age was childhood or the age of dependence. The second age was, I guess, what you consider adulthood. And then the third age was kind of this new territory. And this is where this really resonates for me. It's that period between the end of career or end of parenting, or maybe the combination of both, and the beginning of true old age, or, you know, total dependency, where we're unable to do anything. And then he calls the fourth age, obviously, was, you know, the age of dependency or ill health. So that's the period where so much of us, and when I'm saying us, I'm talking about boomers and maybe mm-hmm. some pre-boomers like myself, that's where we find ourselves, is in that third age. And you know, another great source that I've really been following here close lately is a couple of books written by Dr. Mario Martinez. I don't know if you're familiar with his work.
Tell me about it, yeah.
Well, he's written two books. One calls the Mind-Body Code, and the other one is the Mind-Body Self. And he really kind of views life stages as having what he calls cultural portals. And Dr. Martinez is main message, as far as I'm concerned, is an awful. They're pretty dense and complex books, but very enlightening. He thinks in terms of life having portals, okay, and he defines seven portals: newborn, infancy, childhood, adolescence, young adult, middle age, and old age. Well, you count those up, you got seven portals. Well, portal six, middle age and old age, number seven. That's that third age gap, as far as I'm concerned, between middle age and old age. So he kind of defines it from a different perspective. But I think what's important here is the mindset associated with all of this. One is that it's, number one, we have to accept and appreciate the fact that it's longer than it has been in the past by several dimensions, because what was maybe a 5-year period can be now 30 or 40 years, as I said earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also an opportunity, if we'll consider it this way. It's an opportunity for probably the most productive and satisfying period of our lives. And you're no doubt, I think you're familiar with Rabbi Shachtman's position, you know, in Aging to Saging, where he talks about this being the harvest period, you know, the October, November, December time of our lives, which can be so productive and so satisfying. And so, and I think we've learned a great deal about the importance of attitude in maintaining our vitality, and it starts with attitude. You know, one of the things that I've really appreciated most early in my study on this, and I don't know if you're familiar with Dr. Walter Bortz, but he's a retired Stanford geriatric physician who has written 7 books around this whole topic of aging and vitality and that sort of thing, and tremendous work. And I remember probably 10, 12 years ago, I read his earliest book, which is called Dare to Be 100. And he uses the acronym DARE, D-A-R-E, as a guidepost, if you will, for reaching true old age with some health and vitality. So the DARE stands for diet, attitude, rejuvenation, and exercise. So he says, if you follow that acronym or those components of the acronym, there's really no reason biologically that we shouldn't live to 100 or well beyond. But he does point out in emphasizing this acronym, he says the most important of those 4, of diet, attitude, rejuvenation, and exercise, he said attitude is by far the most important and the most difficult, because we have so many things that are pulling us away from the right attitude to age properly. So,
that's true.
So I thought that was it.
Boy, that's a really good way to put it, and so succinct. That's great. Well, you're an advocate of a concept called 21st century, is it cyclic? Is that what you say, lifestyle?
21st century cyclic lifestyle?
Yeah, cyclic lifestyle. Tell us what that is and why that's important.
Well, first, let me very quickly say that I will not claim authorship of that. I have to give credit to that that terminology to Dr. Ken Dykewald of AgeWave. I don't know if you're familiar with his work, but you know, he is one of the foremost authorities on aging, and he's been pounding on this subject for, I don't know, 25 or 30 years. But yeah, it's a concept that he introduces, and it really revolves around the fact. Ties back to some of the stuff that we've already talked about, the fact that we're living longer, we're living healthier, and so on and so forth. So it's really, when I talk about the 21st century cyclic lifestyle, we're talking about a transformation of what I call the old traditional 3-stage education, work, and leisure model. I mean, that's what I grew up with. No doubts you probably had that influence. I think most people in the boomer generation kind of grew up under that model. You know, you're going to work for 20 years, or you're going to educate for 20 years. You're going to work for 40 years, and then you're going to supposedly retire for 20. I call it the 20-40-20 plan.
Mm-hmm.
So what this one does, in essence, modifies that or transforms it. And it looks at the fact that rather than taking the additional 10 or 15 or 20 or 30 years of life and just tacking it on the end of it, making it just a longer old age, what it does is it breaks that down, and I'll go back to the third age again, and said, let's view that as a time that we break into the same 3 components. In other words, make it cyclical in that third age and make it a combination of labor, leisure, and learning. And that's really kind of what I base my coaching platform on. And when I'm coaching folks that are in or approaching that third stage of life, I say, let's look toward perhaps helping you develop a lifestyle that is built around the combination or a balanced combination of labor, leisure, and learning. And that's really what the cyclic lifestyle is about. And I think Dykewald's research would indicate that we're seeing boomers move more in that direction, where they're mixing those 3. You move in and out of those at your leisure. depending, you know, if you want to work for a while, you do that. If you want to take longer vacation, you do that. But you always stay in the learning process. And that helps, I think, extend life and make it more productive. So I hope that explains it. But that's essentially what that's meant to be, is to work toward a lifestyle, a balanced lifestyle of labor, leisure, and learning. So
yeah, no, that's, hold on, I'm making a note here. That's good. Excellent. Tell me about, you suggest that healthcare illiteracy is the biggest killer in our culture. Can you explain that? I know, you know, another big killer is social isolation, but go ahead, healthcare illiteracy.
Yeah, I know that's a pretty strong statement, maybe stronger than it should be, but it's not my original thought. I've heard this from healthcare professionals, and here's what I base it on. And I was tremendously impacted, and I'll share this with you and your audience. I was tremendously impacted. I'm a very heavy reader, as you can probably tell.
Yes, I can tell, yeah.
And, well, several years ago, I read a book called Younger Next Year, and I'm sure many in your audience are familiar with the book.
If they're not, they should.
Well, I was very influenced by that, and the part that influenced me the most, I think, was the fact that the physician, it was co-authored, and one of them was a physician, mm-hmm. and he makes it very easy to understand how our bodies work at the cellular level. But the message that I received is that our bodies fundamentally are a 24/7 immune system made up of some 35 trillion cells, give or take a couple of trillion. And the cells know what they're supposed to do. It's just that, and they're working 24/7 to do their job, but we work very hard to keep them from doing their job, because we adopt such unhealthy lifestyles. And that's when I say healthcare literacy, scientifically, biologically, we know what our bodies are capable of. And certainly there are exceptions to that where there, you know, maybe some genetic defects, but for the most part, our bodies are designed to work and make us healthy, but we don't support it. So that's when I say we're illiterate in a lot of ways with what we're doing to ourselves to shorten our lifespan. And not only do we're short, and if you're familiar with, I mean, you know what's happened in our lifespan historically. I mean, it's grown more in the last 100 years than it did the 200,000 years preceding it. But now what we're seeing is a leveling off and a turning back on our lifespan, because our lifestyles are not getting any better. We're eating poorly. We're not exercising. You know, we could sit here and state statistics about obesity and diabetes and all those sort of things till the cows come home. It is a reality. We're going backwards. And in the face of us knowing more about how our bodies and brains work than we've ever known. So that's why I say, you know, we're choosing to kind of kill ourselves, or certainly to shorten our lifespan. One of my favorite topics that I like to emphasize with people when I'm coaching is to help them understand the concept of extended morbidity and frailty. And we're still within our culture, we still see, although we're living longer, we're not doing much to shorten that period of morbidity that leads up to our frailty. And that really, most all of it relates back to lifestyle. Mm-hmm. You know, one of my favorite authorities or sources on this is a gentleman by the name of Dr. David Katz, who is a very outspoken physician on the importance of lifestyle. And I remember hearing him say in front of a group of his peers, he says, we already know what we need to know to reduce the five major killers in our culture, which would be diabetes, cancer, dementia. I'm not pulling all five of them up right away, but the five major killers. we know all that we need to know to reduce those by 80%. We don't need any more Nobel Prizes. We don't need any more new drugs. We don't need any more fancy equipment. We already know what we need to know to reduce those by 80%. And fundamentally, it gets back to the fundamentals of eating right and getting exercise. And to your point, as you mentioned earlier, this importance of social engagement.
Mm-hmm.
So isolation is a major killer. And it's isolation is something that for too many people accompanies retirement. So that's mm-hmm. what I'm saying. We choose to be illiterate. I mean, we have all the information we really need to know about keeping ourselves healthy as possible, but we choose to ignore it. And we're not getting a lot of help from our healthcare system, which is a reactive system, not a proactive system.
Totally. Yeah, that's true. And expensive system. So I totally agree with you. Well, Gary, our time is kind of coming to a close here, but I always like to ask, what else should I have asked you that our listeners need to know? You know, what other words of wisdom, you know, what would you want to share in closing?
Wow, that's a big question. my mind goes crazy with the things I guess I could throw out there. I guess I would just simply say, we're at a point, I think, in our culture, we're at a bit of a tipping point, I think, both from the perspective of how culture views us in this age range. We're up against ageism. I just want to try to emphasize to people that, look, let's set aside all the old models, all the old myths, all the old messages that are holding us back from this period of our life being extremely productive and very satisfying. And to do that, we've got to set aside some of the things that we've carried forward from, 50, 60, 70, 80 years ago. It's a time I'm calling, I guess, for a bit of a rebellion, if you will, in my age group. And I don't think you and I are in the same age group, but I'm just saying it's time for us to rise up. We're up against the youth movement. We're up against ageism. And none of it's justified because we've got an awful lot to offer and we need to get out there and offer it. So that's how I'd end it.
Well, I totally love it. And are you familiar with the book? I just interviewed Ashton Applewhite, This Chair Rocks.
I'm a big fan of Ashton. Yes.
Ageism.
I loved her book. I love her style. I've listened to her on some podcasts. She's got a lot of fire, and
I
absolutely love what she's doing. Yeah. I'm flattered to even be in the group that would be including Ashton because she's got a great, great message.
Yep. I just interviewed her, and honestly, we're all aligned. So honestly, Gary, thank you so much. You've given us a lot to think about, and the emphasis in this series is on learning how to make the rest of life the best of life. So may the rest be the best for you, okay?
Thank you for having me. I've enjoyed the time.
Thanks, Gary. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.